when I was a little boy, the streets were filled with love. I used to go outside and play with the boys and girls. You can't do that now.
That's the Lion of the Blues, Bobby Blue Bland, with Sad Street, the title track of his acclaimed 1995 album. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Monday, December the 22nd. And a lone gunman's killing of two on-duty NYPD officers in Brooklyn 2 days ago has reignited multiple firestorms thought to have reached their peak. With nationwide protests over police-involved killings of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, and Eric Garner in Staten Island, New York. Investigators said that early Saturday morning, Ismail Abdullah Brinsley, 28, shot and critically wounded an ex-girlfriend in her Owings Mills, Maryland apartment after an argument, then traveled to New York, intending to kill police officers. He found his quarry at about 3 p.m. Partners Wenjian Liu, 32, and Rafael Ramos, 40, on special duty in their squad car outside the Tompkins House's project in Bedford-Stuyvesant. He opened fire on them and killed them. Brinsley then ran into a nearby subway station and killed himself with a shot to the head, investigators said. The officers' deaths, which Police Commissioner William Bratton is calling assassinations, are having massive impact at many levels and adding even more heat to the already boiling cauldron of debate on policing, especially in communities of color, and the apparent immunity from prosecution that rogue cops seem to enjoy. Our guest, Michael Grays, co-founder of 100 Blacks in Law Enforcement and co-host of Community Cop, aired on the Manhattan Neighborhood Network, is here to help us assess the fallout from the officers' deaths. And Michael, great to have you with us today.
Good to be here, Sister Eutrice. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you. Well, I could think of no one better to give us this particular piece that we'll be dealing with today, and that is from the view of law enforcement. Could you tell us, from your perspective, how are you reading the landscape right now?
Well, let me just say from the outset that my condolences go to the family and loved ones of both officers. Certainly, we in 100 Blacks mourn their loss. Now, the landscape is extremely tense. And I would say that the potential is there to be very reactionary at this time. This is why we are very concerned about the statements of Patrick Lynch, the president of the PBA, because he's throwing fuel on fire. As we speak right now, there's a lot of police officers that are very emotional at this time and can overreact at the drop of a hat. And to have someone in that prestigious position to throw fire in the flame, and now I could care less about his relationship, as you know, their public relationship with the mayor as such. However, I'm concerned about when he makes remarks that characterize the black community as the enemy, which he's consistently done, but it's obviously in this environment, in this current environment, it's more dangerous, it's more pernicious to create a them and us situation where the green light is going to be even brighter now.
Well, let's take a look here, Michael, at what it is he said. This is Patrick Lynch, the president of the New York Police Department's union, talking about the deaths. And this statement he made on Saturday afternoon in Brooklyn, just after the deaths of the officers. Oh, the clip froze. We had a frozen clip here. Okay, no problem. So let's continue. We'll see how we can unfreeze the clip, and then okay. we'll go.
Well, basically, I'm sure that clip probably was one where it said something relative to that there's hands, there's blood on people's hands, and among
okay,
them,
we got it. We got okay. it now. It's okay. It's unfrozen now.
Okay.
That became part of the NYPD family. Every police officer that lined these streets today with sadness in their eyes to show respect as we carry two hero police officers out of this hospital. We will shoulder the burden for these families each and every day for the rest of their lives. Generations of police officers will know their names and hold them close to their hearts and educate our children about the sacrifice they made. There's blood on many hands tonight. Those that incited violence on the street under the guise of protest that tried to tear down what New York City police officers did every day. We tried to warn, it must not go on, it cannot be tolerated. That blood on the hands starts on the steps of City Hall in the office of the mayor. Starting today, we started the mourning for our brother police officers. Their heroes, their fathers, their brothers, their children. That's the men we lost today. So starting in the next couple of hours and going for a number of days, New York City police officers, through their sadness, will straighten their shoulders, stiffen their backs, and mourn for these families. We'll mourn for our city, and we'll mourn for our brothers. When these funerals are over, those responsible will be called on the carpet and held accountable.
Well, that was Patrick Lynch talking right after the police officers had been pronounced dead at the Woodhull Hospital in the Bedford-Stuyvesant section of Brooklyn. So, Michael, you were saying that these are inflammatory words, but they sound to me typical of what a union leader would say, a very impassioned speech at a very, very impassioned time.
Yes, you're absolutely correct, Utrecht. However, the prevailing message, and this is why I'm saying it's dangerous, the prevailing message that has been echoed all over the entire country, one is hands up, don't shoot. And the other one is, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. Now, what about those statements are anti-police. To equate that with a hostile environment, to say that it will be addressed, that it cannot be tolerated, is the height of contradiction. Patrick Lynch is a police officer. He's supposed to be a professional. To now determine and characterize a hands-up, don't shoot as anti-police remarks that somehow calling for the death of police officers, to say that I can't breathe is somehow cannot be tolerated, that is as mild gets in America relative to demonstration and protest. If you can't say I can't breathe, if you can't hold your hands up as those five football players did, or as several basketball players warmed up prior to the game with I can't breathe, if that cannot be tolerated, then what is Patrick Lynch truly saying? That you have an intolerant army of close to 35,000 that's not going to tolerate you saying I can't breathe? Then what are they going to do when you say I can't breathe? He is not the general of the police department. He is the union representative. He has now regulated himself to the office of a general, where he's now a chief now, and he can command troops. Now, it's one thing to say to police officers, want them to sign a document relative to not welcoming the mayor. Even with that, he cannot even do that. That is up to that particular family. That's not his call. If a family doesn't want anyone there at a funeral, as, you know, it's customary, whether it's whoever it might be, a political figure or a work superior officer, what have you, they reserve the right to do that. Patrick Lynch does not reserve the right to tell everyone that the mayor is not welcome at a police officer's funeral. So he's now assigning powers that he does not have, and he's assuming responsibilities that he's never been given. So in this them and us attitude, he's now rising up. He's using political expediency to ensure that he gets back in office, which is coming up in another year, I believe. So what he's doing is that he's using the death of these officers to fuel a reelection campaign and to put himself in the center of all of this that's going on. And when the media follows that, you now get off track with the call for justice, because that's what I Can't Breathe is. It's a clarion call. It's an appeal to the legal system for redress. When you say hands up, don't shoot, you're not particularly aiming that at any police department in particular. That's an appeal to the legal system to indict these police officers who are shooting unarmed black men ad nauseum. So that's why I'm saying, Sister Eutrice, that this is dangerous, because now a harmless statement that's not even directed at police officers is now being looked at as you're doing something anti-police, therefore I'm going to look at you as a criminal, and I'm going to use the powers at my disposal to arrest you, or worse. So in a charged environment where two cops have been killed, and I must remind you that black officers have been killed by white officers. I don't see that passion from Patrick Lynch when that happens. As a matter of fact, he keeps his mouth shut every time a black cop has been shot by a white cop. You don't hear anything from Patrick Lynch. And that's amazing that he can care for these officers, because the shooter in this particular case was a black man. But when Omar Edwards laid in the street for a half hour while police brass was figuring, while they were in touch with 1PP, while they were talking to a 1PP right there on 125th Street and 2nd Avenue in the heart of Harlem, when Omar Edwards was killed by a white cop, you didn't see any patch. You didn't hear a word from Patrick Lynch. The only organization that made that an issue to get justice for Omar Edwards was 100 blacks in law enforcement who care.
Omar Edwards being a police officer.
A black police officer, a two-year veteran of the department, just barely off probation, had a young wife, 25 years old, two young children, and certainly he should have coddled them. He didn't do that. He didn't even say a word about it. He didn't call for justice. Why? Because the shooter was a white cop. He took his white supremacist position, which is to support the white cop against the black cop. And that's what he always does. So this somehow emotional outburst that he makes as if he loves all cops, he loves cops, but it's with restrictions. He loves white cops. He supports white cops. He does not support black cops. And in this particular case, when a black cop was killed, you didn't hear word from Patrick Lynch, which showed you this is disingenuous at best. All this stuff he's doing is just political theater.
I want to come to this word that has been used and adopted this early in the game, and the word is assassinations. Do you believe, and I do not in any way mean to, demean or to take from the severity of the situation and the tragedy of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
But the word assassinations, used by the commissioner, used by Lynch, used by others in elective office, is this the appropriate word to use as to what has happened here?
No, because I would just say within America itself, when the word assassination is used, it has a conspiratorial nature to it. It has more hands in it than one. It has planning. It has precision to it. When you when you use the word, it's very suggestive. When you say assassination, as if black folks are organized and he's part of a larger conspiracy or some type of organization that's anti-cop. Certainly, it was a shooting. You can even call it an execution-style shooting, if you like. But the word assassination is a bit much because it has some other connotations other than the physical shooting itself. So I think that it's not accidental. It's not happenstance when you have a mayor, police commissioner, and now you get others using that because that's dog whistle tactics that they're using to put a message out there that very well might not be there because it could have been an EDP, emotionally disturbed person, basically doing that because they didn't say he assassinated his girlfriend, even though she survived, his former girlfriend. They're not saying that that was an assassination attempt. They're saying the assassination was the police officers who, from what we understand, was having lunch at the time. So it was an execution style, I would say. And certainly he didn't give them advance warning, but I'm not sure that Eleanor Bumpus had advance warning. And I know Omar Edwards, there's no proof he ever even pulled his gun. And he was shot in the back, and the mayor and police commissioner, the prior ones, Bloomberg and Kelly, said that Omar Edwards was shot in the chest. But the autopsy proved that he was shot in the back twice and was killed by Officer Dutton in the back, and they covered it up with the help of the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, which was Morgenthau at that time. They covered up a black police officer being killed in plain sight. And so all this emotion around a police officer being killed was not exercised when Omar Edwards was killed.
Here's NYPD Chief of Detectives Robert Boyce discussing what they began to learn about the shooter, Ismael Brinsley.
We're told by family members that he's never expressed any radicalization at all. This is a Muslim family. His mother goes on to state he had a very troubled childhood and was often violent. Mother expressed fear of him, and she says she hasn't seen him in 1 month. Brinsley attempted suicide in the past and attempted to hang himself a year ago. We have found on one of our videos two males who spoke with the perpetrator just prior to the event. He begins the conversation with them. They start speaking, and he asks them three things. He asks them for their gang affiliation. He asks them to follow him on Instagram, and then he says, watch what I'm going to do. He then walks northbound on Tompkins, past the two officers in the car, circles back around, goes across the street, and comes up behind the officers. And that's where we are right now. Those individuals are at the 7-9 precinct. We're speaking to him now. We don't believe they had anything to do with anything, but we'll tap down on that further as we go forward. His social media investigations, what we're looking at right now, is Facebook, Instagram, Gmail, and two phones were recovered. If you remember in the investigation, he stole his girlfriend's phone. We have recovered that in and around Brooklyn and around Barclays Center. We're investigating that right now. We also have his private phone that we recovered in Baltimore County. All those are being investigated by the New York NYPD computer crimes. Most of his postings and rants are on the Instagram account. And what we're seeing from this right now is anger against the government. There is one where he burned the flag and made some statements. There's others with talks of anger at the police. He specifically mentions Michael Brown and Eric Garner. And other postings as well of self-despair, of anger at himself or where his life is right now. Right now, we have no gang affiliation at all attributed to this man. He has no tattoos to suggest anything of it. And he has no religious statements that we found on Instagram at all. None whatsoever.
Well, that was quite telling because we have early in the game here, Michael, we have none other than the chief of detectives, Robert Boyce, mm-hmm. pretty much validating some of what you've just said, that they were able to ascertain early after this tragic event that this was also a case of a young man in very deep trouble.
Well, yes. What they're doing right now is that a timeline is being developed. And there are a few gaps in the timeline. They know his method of transportation from Maryland to here. They pretty much know the time frames. There are a few gaps that they're trying to put together. But this shows you the science when you really want somebody bad, how you want to. You don't want any gaps. You want to erase the gaps. So they have a few. They want to find out even the times that he came back here to New York. Where was he staying? And rightly so, the family would say that, well, he wasn't with me. And so they're going to find out where he stayed whenever he came to New York. And those people are going to have some explaining to do, even though they have nothing to do with the shooting. So if they say that they haven't seen him in a month and they come up with some videos that they were seen in that month, they're going to have some explaining to do because – even though this person allegedly killed themselves, this does not mean that it's over. I mean, it would be a dead issue normally, but for them to want the timeline suggests to me that it's more than just a timeline, you know. And to get to exact these statements from friends and family, they're going to be held to those statements under a microscope, even though it appears to be harmless, the statements, no, I haven't seen him, haven't seen him in a month, boom, 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 all of that. However, if they find otherwise, you know, the hardball game starts. So,
but he says, what would the hardball game be?
Well, they're going to whatever you said, if you say that you haven't seen him in a month and they find out that 2 hours before he was at your house, you're going to have some explaining to do. And even though you might not have physically been there, you're going to have to explain what your role was, what was he doing at your house, was there any type of assistance, and what was discussed before, and if he was discussing what he was going to do, why didn't you get on the phone right away? What did you do to stop it, to impede it, even if you're a civilian? So when they're looking for a timeline, to fulfill a timeline, just don't be surprised that they're looking for a little bit more than that.
But apart from the timeline, Detective Boyce, or Chief Boyce, says that they established that he tried to kill himself. He tried to hang himself a year ago, that he was of suicidal bent, and that he was basically self-hating. And he drew a picture that included a psychological profile, that this was a young man who was psychologically unstable. Well, so at the same time that they're doing this, at the same time that they're able to ascertain this much, there still is this very one-sided report from people like Lynch and the mayor and even Giuliani and the governor and so forth, as if they are not dealing here with an emotionally, possibly a very disturbed person who committed a vile act. That's for sure. You know, allegedly, I have to say, because we don't know for sure what happened here. We'll wait for that. But is tied to a very, very horrible thing. But at the same time, we have the chief of detectives laying out a scenario that we also have to factor in the possibility, the very real possibility, that this was a young man who was very, very emotionally disturbed.
Right, but that will not, but that's not the way it's being characterized by Patrick Lynch. When you're creating that them and us, you're not looking at it through a sympathetic lens or an understanding lens that this person might be emotionally disturbed, because the thinking is that he's the enemy and that perhaps people that look like him, perhaps people that associated with him, are enemies also. And so, you know, the hound dogs are still out. So I would say that this is why they're still requesting videos. They're tracking down all of the sites he was at, and they're using, obviously, the electronic equipment he had on them to go through this process, because if they find out any loose ends, you know, they're going to tie them up, you know. And, you know, like I said, people will have to qualify their actions in those last few hours. And this is why they're ascertaining videos as they speak. This is why they know the six rounds that he shot, one round in Baltimore, four rounds against those police officers, and that sixth round supposedly on himself, you know, as the story is told. And so I would say that within that context, all of those people, they're just not clear. They're just not off the hook just because they said they haven't seen him in a month. That's primarily what I'm saying.
Is it also an effort to say that, to bring in here this movement that had begun to emerge, a very forceful and persuasive movement, to say that this movement was responsible for influencing his thinking and therefore his actions, and therefore through this linking they can now condemn the movement that is burgeoning here?
Oh, absolutely. It's no doubt. That's a ground ball. When you consider that he used those names, you know, when you speak that word noise and say those names in particular, it does not mean you have a political philosophy. It doesn't mean that you now have a mandate, but to use those names, now you have the license to connect it with other people irrespective. So this is why they can now attack the movement itself. And the movement, to say, to have a movement where the predominant words are "I can't breathe" and "hands up, don't shoot," and things like that, which are innocuous, to now have that under a microscope, it creates a chilling effect. And maybe some people who are on the fence about marching, demonstrating, you know, airing their views, uniting with other people, forming organizations, going down to meetings where they normally would not go to meetings, where they might have to consider their college career and tuition, where they might have to consider, am I going to go down there and engage in civil disobedience now? I don't know what can happen now. You know, those handcuffs can get tighter, you know, and that push can turn into a punch now and what have you. So you have to consider all that. So it overall will create a chilling effect among our people. And now whites might still feel the luxury of going to and participating in whatever type of marches they want to, but they know they have white skin privilege. Where blacks have to reconsider, do you really want to go there? Do you really want to lay down and now stop traffic and stop business, as it were, and take a chance on being on that front line or something like that? That can create a chilling effect on things like that with innocuous statements like I can't breathe and hands up. You know, if that's now criminal, folks are in trouble.
I want to ask about the relationship here that has been expressed, the animosity between a city hall and one PP, as you call it, one police plaza. Back in 1992, I remembered there was a similar dynamic between one police plaza, the police union, and City Hall, then occupied by Mayor Dinkins.
Right.
And there was this so-called demonstration that turned into a full-fledged police riot. 10,000 police officers had surrounded City Hall, and it was an extraordinary statement of intimidation, I would say. It was as if the police decided that the mayor was beneath them and that they had unilateral rights to do whatever it is they wanted to do. And, you know, we had pictures of police officers on the hoods of cars,
right,
rocking these cars and so forth. You recall that?
Absolutely.
I am getting the sense that there's a kind of similar momentum gaining here between one police plaza and City Hall. Do we have a situation where the police here are basically confirming that they are, you know, there's a renegade element that does not respect the mayor at all, turning their backs on the mayor when, you know, protocols call for salute, or at least, and certainly not turning their backs? The union president, who is really a police officer, you're correct, he's a police officer, basically running around as if he were, you know, an elected official and behaving in a manner that is most unusual for someone who is, in effect, a police officer to the chief of the city. I don't understand it. What do you make of it?
Well, I would say that certainly it can never reach the proportions that was reached under the Dinkins administration, because that was strictly 100% white supremacy at its finest, to have a black mayor running the city and actually trying to, even in a small way, exercise a modicum of power. The greatest symbol of white supremacy in New York City is not Wall Street, it's not the stock exchange, it's the police department. And that symbol is a symbol that won't allow anyone to tread on it. So even with the duly elected mayor, Mayor Dinkins, that riot, there was a police riot, by the way, and that riot was led by Rudolph Giuliani, former prosecutor, federal prosecutor. He led it. He was throwing his F-bombs out there. As you said, there were cars, there were police officers on cars, rocking cars, trying to turn over cars. They were calling Dinkins all kind of ethnic slurs. I mean, the mildest one among them that could be printed was washroom attendant and things like that. And it would never, on its worst day, it would never get like that with Mayor de Blasio. You know, even though, you know, some of them might look at his black wife as an energy booster, it would never reach that level, because they look at him, they see a white man, they see themselves still, you know, but they want to force him more to, I guess, a position that's favorable to Patrick Lynch, but he can get his executive board and some people to disrespect the mayor in that regard by turning their backs, but that won't happen with the rank and file. And I believe that Police Commissioner Bratton, irrespective of, even though he doesn't care when black cops are killed, he doesn't, certainly that has no care for if black people are killed by police officers, he's going to protect the shield. However, he should call Patrick Lynch in and remind him, when all is said and done, he's a police officer, and that he's employed by the city. He's not employed by himself. That he needs to call him in and tell him that a professional de-escalates situation. Not escalate, de-escalate. And what he's doing now is escalating a them and us attitude, and certainly that's going to be injurious to the African-American community, Caribbean community alike, all, you know, and also the Latino community. So he should call him in and remind him of what his responsibilities are and what he should be doing as a labor leader, because that's what he is. He's a labor leader. I mean, he's not it's not impossible for him to be fired, because right now he's of a type that would lead a similar type of riot. Now, you have to remember that racism pays. I mean, I understand why Patrick Lynch is doing it. See, racism pays. The current union leader of the fire department, Cassidy, he rose from relative obscurity just by showing that he hates black folks and Latinos. He was the one after 9/11 when the city wanted to symbolically have show a picture with the burnt flag, the tattered flag, down there in at the Trade Towers. He wanted to the one at Ground Zero. He wanted to have a symbol. They wanted to have a symbol of a black firefighter, a white firefighter, and a Latino firefighter, and it was flying for a moment. And then he came from relative obscurity and said, "It's none of be none of that. It's going to be all white guys." And when he said that, that rallied the entire fire department, and he was voted in as the president. Because the president didn't say that. He said that. So being a white supremacist pays. It will make you rise to power. So he went, like I said, from relative obscurity overnight by saying, damn it, it's going to be that tattered flag is going to have a symbol of three white firefighters. And he's been president of the fire department ever since, just for doing that. And this is why Patrick Lynch understands that well, and this is why he does what he does, because it's all political expediency.
I want to talk about the officers. Wen Jianyu, 32, and Rafael Ramos. Wen Jianyu was married just 2 months prior to being killed. And Ramos had just basically joined the force officially, having been a school safety officer before and always wanting to be a member of the police department. It is beyond tragedy, really, what had happened on Saturday to them. But within the department, I understand that Mr. Lynch is very passionate as the representative of all police officers. What, however, has been the lot of Asians within the police force and Latinos within the police force?
I would say that their numbers have rose. However, the numbers of black police officers have not rose in the last 20 years. The numbers are still the same. Now, I would say that, I was over there in Tompkins today, actually, and I can't even talk about it, because if you don't have anything good to say, now I got to take from people in the community what they thought of those officers. So, but that's for another time, maybe after the funerals and all that. But I would just say that their numbers have, like I said, increased, and black police officers' numbers are still the same until these recent classes. They've been basically the same over the last 20-some-odd years.
So when what is the reaction that you know of the Latino Officers Association, the Asian Officers Association?
Well, I listened to Tony yesterday, you know, of the National Latino Officers Association, and certainly his condolences went out to those police officers who lost their lives. But he raised questions, as did Noel Leader from 100 Blacks in Law Enforcement, as to the statements that are being made by Patrick Lentz. He took issue with it. Noel Leader took issue with it. And certainly they weren't asked, but I'm sure that they took issue with things that Giuliani has been saying, things that governors are saying, former Governor Pataki is saying, when they're saying that they're basically telling the mayor that he's not putting his foot on the throats of black people enough, and that Giuliani just basically said that, you know, you got to crush these things before they can even rise. You know, just a hint. If somebody just peeped their head out of the window, you got to crush it before they come outside and start acting big and bad. And so Giuliani's approach, as we well know, whether it was the Million Youth March when he had a helicopter dip down right into the crowd there in the middle of Harlem and made people scatter, and women had babies and baby carriages out there that were scattering to get away from a helicopter. And it was a real hostile, dangerous situation as he sent, you know, police officers up to the stage. He removed, you know, community affairs cops and had a regiment of cops rush the stage hoping to beat down or worse, you know, Dr. Khaled and others who were on the stage. And we had members on the stage at that time, you know, so I think he just, you know, and Giuliani tried to ride to the White House on showing that he will step on the throats of black folks because he wanted a major rebellion in the city, because he would have rode it straight to Capitol Hill. And that, and this is what they're telling de Blasio, to crush these protests. And these protests are peaceful. They're peaceful, they're law, the people are law-abiding, and people have constitutional rights. That federal judge just within a year said that black people's constitutional rights are being violated. So how can Patrick Lentz and so many others, Giuliani and Pataki, ignore that? They have said it was a serious pattern and practice of constitutional rights being violated. That was done by a judge. So I'm saying in that environment, that's not 100 blacks saying it. That's not United African Movement or Automatic saying it. A judge came to that conclusion. And the police department railed against that judge. The mayor at that time, Bloomberg, railed against that judge and had her removed. So I'm just saying that professionals are supposed to be tolerant. Professionals are supposed to be understanding, and they're supposed to be meeting of the minds, reasoning together, and yet that's all being thrown aside. So Noel Leader and Tony Miranda yesterday called for reasonable thinking to come forward in this process, not for the players like the Patakis of the world and the Patrick Lynch's of the world to speak for everyone, and that these are fringe elements that are using political expediency to get where they want to go, whether it's Pataki trying to get to Capitol Hill and or Patrick Lentz trying to get reelected. It's all red meat that's being cast out there. And yesterday, both organizations, 100 Blacks in Law Enforcement Who Care and National Latino Officers Association, both were on the same page that this stuff needs to stop and that Patrick Lentz should be reeled in by the police commissioner.
So coming back to where we started, what should people, therefore, how should they view this horrible tragedy? What was it?
It's a tragic event. It's in no way was this person heroic for doing what he did. He wasn't a hero in shooting his former girlfriend. He was not a hero in shooting these police officers. I don't think that he had an indoctrination that suggested that he moved that way. I'm not suggesting that he was part of any philosophical group that had that. But at the same time, I don't think that it's right for Reverend Sharpton to have these mothers of these victims to parade them out saying that they condemn that because you're waiting for an economic recompense within a year from now, so you're parading them around because you don't want these recent events to ill affect the money that's going to be achieved in a year from now. I don't like that either, because that's wrong to have them. If the words were used in social media, the names Eric Garner or the name of Michael Brown, you do not have to bring the mothers, the sisters, and aunts and all of them in front of cameras to condemn that. I mean, because when somebody says something about Reverend Sharpton, he whenever he wants to, he can ignore it, but he doesn't want to ignore it when white people are saying certain things about him or the family, because they're not looking for justice. They're looking for economic recompense down the road a year from now. So they don't want it. So which tells you in advance they're going to settle. That it's not going to be a court proceeding. They're going to settle this out of court. So I think that both of them are bad. I just think that when all is said and done, reasonable minds should prevail, because there has to be a cooling off period, because when all is said and done, the police officers are going to win those street battles. You know, anybody, that think that they're going to follow that pattern, you know, it's going to get ugly. And in that regard, be mindful of what you're doing. I'm not telling anybody how to act when they out here, but I'm just saying, as the old saying, think twice before you do whatever you're going to do.
Was it an exaggeration by the police commissioner and by Patrick Lynch and others to suggest that this killing, these two killings of these two officers on Saturday, basically have been the first statement in what is to come of an all-out police/community war?
Well, I didn't like the mayor's language when he said, "To kill a cop strikes at the very foundation of the city," because that was not his attitude when Omar Edwards was killed. It didn't shake the foundation of the city, because it was done by a white cop that killed a black police officer. So I think that type of language is intermittent. You know, when you use the word assassination, that's inflammatory. You know, so I would suggest you not use that, because that's sort of like connecting other people with that, and that's why you got the hound dogs out there now. So I would say that the mayor's language was not the best language relative to what's going on. I know he's trying to now appease the PBA, but he should be mindful of his language, and I think that certainly Patrick Lynch, who has a history of white supremacy, I think that he needs to be reeled in. And I just did a show not too long ago where a police officer from the 4-3 in the Bronx said that entire precinct, for the most part, wants to see Lynch out. So I think that's why Lynch is doing the things he's doing, because he's found that there's some resentment in some places. So he's trying to charge the troops and create a them and us environment, which is inflammatory and incendiary.
Well, we have covered about half the ground we should be covering today, but we did so in thorough fashion because of your guidance and because of your expertise, Michael, so I want to thank you for that. But I also want a rain check so that you could come back again and we can finish up. But this was a very good introduction, in a way, to the events as they, you know, in the immediate aftermath of this tragedy. It gives us an entirely different reference point on how these things you know, are manipulated for all different kinds of reasons, reasons that we don't even know. But there are reasons for why people are behaving the way they are behaving. And we will get more detailed as we go along. But I want to thank you so much for being available to us today.
And thank you, Sister Eutrice. And just remember, now the NYPD will get more from that 1033 program. Now that this has happened, it'll be more justification to up the militarization. Just one little note before I go, just that. And that aside, thank you for the invite, and I'm looking forward to the next time.
But before you go, tell us about what you're doing on Community Cop tomorrow.
The producers are on vacation, so we won't be doing a live show tomorrow and next week. But when we come back, we will talk about Ronald Singleton, who was killed 4 days prior to Eric Garner by the police department, and we'll explain some of the circumstances around that, where they alleged that he was on PCP and he was killed in police custody. And that should never happen, Sister Eutrice. If you were in police custody, based on the training and the wherewithal, you should never lose your life. When you're unarmed and you're in the custody of five or six police officers, you should be safe and secure, and you should, whatever, face a judge or jury appears, you should not expire while in the custody of police officers.
Thanks once again. Michael Graves, co-founder of 100 Blacks in Law Enforcement Who Care and co-host of Community Cop, which airs on the Manhattan Neighborhood Network on Tuesdays, but not the next two Tuesdays, the Tuesday after that.
Right.
Thanks again for being with us.
Thank you, Sister Eutrice, and have a good day.
Thank you. And that brings us to the end of our program today. You know, this is such an awful thing to have happened. Really, every time you hear these kinds of cases occurring, where people, you know, two men left their homes that morning, left their wives and children, or left loved ones, and presumably they went to work, and presumably they'll be back home at the end of the day. It didn't happen. And we have no idea what basically percolated in the mind of this young man, who clearly was not in his right mind. But to suddenly decide that he was in his right mind, despite all the evidence that shows that he, you know, the police chief of detectives himself said the mother even was afraid of him, thought of him as being too violent. He shoots his ex-girlfriend before coming to New York on this murderous assignment. So we have to be clear about what certain things are telling us, that we can't just jump to conclusions like that. And we have to spot it when people are abusing a situation for other gains. And that includes people from the community. And we will get to that this week as well. So I want to thank you very much for joining me today. Let me know what you're thinking at leadstories@gmail.com or on Facebook, Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. Keep it right here. Coming up next is Wake Up Call with Richard Martin. As always, I hope that this was instructive, that you got something out of this program. You let me know. And always a great pleasure and a great, great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.
This is Sand Street. I'm living on Sand Street. This is Sand Street.